Welcome to Disinformation Wars, a project of the American Foreign Policy Council. I'm AFPC Senior Vice President Ilan Berman. Disinformation Wars is a series of conversations with officials, experts, and practitioners designed to take you behind the scenes of the struggle for hearts and minds of global publics that's now taking place around the world. It's a contest being waged by Russia, China, Iran, and other actors, and the stakes could not be any higher.
A new war is underway in Europe. On February 24th, after months of building up forces along his country's common border with Ukraine, Russia's president, Vladimir Putin, officially launched what he called a special military operation against his country's western neighbor. The goals of this large-scale campaign are broad and open-ended. They include halting the eastward expansion of the NATO alliance and both demilitarizing and, quote-unquote, denazifying Ukraine. But it is already apparent that Putin's war isn't going to plan. Stiffer than expected resistance from the Ukrainian military and the Ukrainian people, as well as a remarkable display of unity on the part of Western nations, have put Russia on the back foot strategically and set the stage for a protracted, brutal, and costly conflict. If you're anything like me, you've been riveted in recent days by the images of Russian aggression, the pictures of terrible devastation in Ukrainian cities, and the deeply moving stories of human suffering, individual bravery, and national resolve. These images and narratives, however, just scratch the surface of what's taking place in Ukraine and what this conflict might ultimately mean for Ukraine, for Russia, and for the West at large. To make sense of all this, I turn to one of Washington's leading Russia watchers. Michael Kaufman directs the Russia program at CNA, a nonprofit research and analysis organization located in Arlington, Virginia. He's also a fellow at the Woodrow Wilson Center's Kennan Institute and a senior editor at War on the Rocks. When it comes to Russia, he's a true expert on all things strategic, military, and geopolitical. Michael, it's great to talk to you.
Oh, thanks for having me on your program.
Let's start with the conduct of the war itself. There's a lot more happening on the ground than what we're seeing on TV and on social media. And in your work, you're tracking Russian military movements, the Kremlin shifting strategy, and developments that are related to the NATO response. What's the latest in terms of the big picture that's emerging here? What's taking place that we should know about?
Well, the initial Russian operation was clearly premised on this wild notion that they might be able to take the Ukrainian capital within a few days and that there wouldn't be much military resistance. So a lot of folks think that they're seeing a combined arms operation, the Russian military throwing its might into Ukraine. In reality, this isn't a combined arms operation by the Russian armed forces. Most Russian military power has been sitting on the sidelines. A lot of capabilities like air power have hardly been used or only sort of trickling into this war in the last couple of days. What clearly happened is that Vladimir Putin really believed the things he was saying. In fact, in some way, the political system of Russia successfully disinformed itself. He believes that it's still like 2014 and that with a small amount of military power, they could quickly get to the Ukrainian capital, get Zelensky to surrender, and then take control of the country and install a pro-Russian regime. And that the point of Russian forces was not to fight the Ukrainian military, which is a fairly sizable army. It's one of the largest militaries in Europe. But actually to just quickly go down roads, make these sort of thunder runs, and block entire sectors under the belief that essentially the Ukrainian military wouldn't resist. And it's completely wild and completely unworkable concept of operation. So the first couple of days looked bizarre. There was no real Russian air power or electronic warfare or heavy use of artillery or drones or all the things you'd expect in a major war. It was almost puzzling. And very small number of Russian units actually had gone in to engage Ukrainian forces. It was mostly kind of skirmishes, and they were clearly trying to avoid the major cities. And so one couldn't possibly figure it out. It was sort of, you know, the largest country in the world is invading the largest country in Europe. But even though they're trying to do a full-scale invasion, they don't have the military operation for it. And it definitely puzzled me for the first 2 days trying to understand what I was seeing. And believe it or not, it shocked a lot of observers as far as Moscow too. Those who are in military circles in Russia didn't know about this operation either, many of them. They were surprised. It was kept secret from them. And guess what? It was kept secret from the troops as well. Part of the reason the Russian troops morale is so low is that they were deployed on exercises. Then they were thrown towards the border, but they were told, don't worry, nothing serious is going to happen. We're just there to essentially intimidate the Ukrainians. And then when the commanders in the last final days got their orders, they were shocked. Russian troops were not psychologically prepared to go to war. They weren't told they were going to be going to war with Ukraine. And many of them got thrown into this fight unprepared, unsupported, terribly organized. It's an omni-shambles, to be honest. So that's how the war looked for the first couple of days. After that, they realized they made a big mistake, got a big bloody nose, and have started making adjustments. Now you see heavier fighting, you see much more attrition. And Russian forces, you know, are taking significant losses. But on the other hand, they've also progressed considerably into Ukraine along several axes of attack. And they're still focused on Kyiv as the center of gravity. They want to assault the city, and they've started increasingly using firepower, artillery, and the likes, you see particularly shelling Kharkiv to devastating effect. So that's sort of where we are at this stage. But the war has clearly not gone the way Russian leadership thought it would. Their assumptions were completely wrong. The concept of operations unworkable. And they thought they could keep the war actually secret from the Russian public. You know, Russian news media weren't even allowed to call the war.
There's obviously tremendous global interest in the conflict currently. And every media channel of note, left, right, and center, is doing its best to cover the war. In general, from what you've seen, what's the media getting right in terms of its coverage? And what's it getting wrong?
I think that they're getting right the story of this war. I think, unfortunately, a lot of the media doesn't have tremendous access because you have lots of journalists that basically were in some cities and then had to evacuate from them and push west. So now you're basically seeing that a lot of the media has ended up relying on the OSINT community, people who are posting things online, because the media's access is rapidly diminishing. It's very clear that their actual on the ground is dwindling. What are they getting wrong? I'd say two things. One, whenever a war starts, both sides start making official claims, and the official claims are part of the war. They're part of the war for the information environment, and so they grossly understate losses, they grossly exaggerate their military success or what they've done, and the media can easily fall for it, and it basically, because it doesn't have access, it starts repeating everybody's talking points. That's issue one, and it's common. And then the other part is, of course, what's happening with the war effort. I think originally, folks in the media didn't understand how absurd the Russian operation really was, like what they were trying to do. And then probably puzzled in some ways by how unsuccessful the Russian military campaign was at the outset. And I've been going back and forth on this one myself, looking at what part of it is the Russian military is just bad at the basics. That is, you know, looking at it, we'd overrated their military capability and capacity for a large operation, in part because they haven't done anything this big, you know, since the Cold War. We just haven't seen them attempt anything like this. Versus what part of it is the actual craziness of the operation and completely unworkable concept, where no military would have succeeded trying to do something this way against a country like Ukraine. And so I think that the only thing I think the media got wrong is that the media was rapidly running ahead with conclusions one way or the other based on 48 hours here or 72 hours there of action, and not sufficiently tempered with folks saying, hey, hang on, this is the beginning of a large war in Europe. And even though events are evolving rapidly, you need to temper your expectations about what's happening and how this might play out. So war is highly contingent. And you can only see, it's very hard to see beyond the initial operations, a tremendous amount of uncertainty. So you can't create these waves of euphoria of one side winning, another side losing, you know, every couple of days. That's not helpful. Just my own personal view. That's not helpful for the information environment. because the public's looking to the media for an indication of what's happening, and you can't put them on a roller coaster ride because that's what it'll feel like.
So I want to drill down on that a little bit because it very naturally raises the question of strategy. The common trope that you hear from news analysts and from commentators is that Vladimir Putin is prosecuting this war as part of a long-running effort to recreate the Soviet Union. Is that the correct frame through which to view the conflict, do you think? Why or why not?
Yeah, I don't think that's true, but he is trying to recreate historical Russia. I think people are really focused on the Soviet Union. They don't understand what historical Russia and Imperial Russia used to look like. He's much more about recreating what he says he wants. Historical Russia is Imperial Russia. Vladimir Putin's belief is that the Bolsheviks, in creating the Soviet Union, destroyed Russia, Russia proper, right? That's why he says that, you know, Ukraine is, in his view, a construct of the Bolsheviks. And the countries like Ukraine, who were Soviet Socialist Republics, were given gifts, quote unquote, like territories from Russia, for example, Crimea, and that they were allowed to leave the Soviet Union with territory that actually should belong to Russia. And so a big part, I think, of the way he looks at it is that he's only willing to recognize Ukraine as an entity if Ukraine has a relationship with Russia the way Belarus does. And in fact, it's pretty clear that he was going to install a pro-Russian government and establish some sort of union state type structure, not dissimilar from Belarus. And so it's probably less about raw territorial acquisition and much more about reintegrating what he sees as the former historical Russian space, where he sees Russian compatriots and Russian speakers as part of this historical Russia as well. It's not just about the territory, but also about the human terrain. You know, he's spoken about this extensively over the years. And people didn't take him quite as literally, but they probably should have. He meant all those things he said. And those who follow Russians, you know, like you do and I do as well, I'm not surprised. I was one of the people who spent months arguing that this war would happen, as you probably remember. And people were saying, no, it's not going to happen. If it does, it'll be something limited in the Donbass. And I was saying, no, it will not. It will be a maximalist war where they will pursue regime change and involve the bulk of the territory of Ukraine. And he's serious about this. Like, people need to take him seriously. As the adage goes, you know, if a man shows you who he really is, you should believe him.
And to your point, the speeches that Putin gave before the quote-unquote special military operation on February 21st, and then immediately after the hostilities started on February 24th, said exactly what you just did, which was that the Bolsheviks were at fault for giving the Ukrainians false nationalist pretenses, and the reintegration needs to happen because it's historical destiny. And I think that's missed a lot in the commentary of sort of what we're seeing right now. So I'm glad you flagged it. All right. So let me ask you a question here about information warfare, because it's a subject that looms very large when we talk about what's happening, how the battlefield was prepared, right? Military experts and analysts talk a great deal about information preparation of the battlefield, creating the informatic conditions necessary for war to go more smoothly. And I wonder, from your perspective, how did the Russians do that? How did the Russians try to set the informational table in advance of this conflict? What did they talk about vis-a-vis Ukraine? What do they want to accomplish?
It's a bit of a puzzle. I actually think that the folks that follow the information environment and media had a real challenge on their hands in the run-up to this conflict. I'll tell you why. First, the Russian state had prepared the Russian public over the course of 8 years. Poll surveys consistently, they showed that no matter what happened, well over 50% of the Russian people would blame Ukraine and NATO for starting the war, and only 4 or 5% would actually blame the Kremlin. So they were already there from the outset. They'd sort of cooked information space over the course of many years. And then so when people were basically up at night watching Channel 1 and Kisilov, they couldn't see it. They couldn't see it coming. That was the first issue. Second is, they were kind of looking in the wrong place. The approach Moscow was taking to this wasn't actually as a special operation that they were trying to keep secret. That's the strangest part, right? That they weren't really preparing for a war, and they weren't mobilizing either the people or the military for a real war. Nobody seriously knew. And most people in Russia didn't expect this war to come, which is, I think, why they took a huge gamble and massively miscalculated this. Because they didn't prepare the Russian public for a war that could drag on, time is actually not on their side, in my view, in terms of this entire war. Next part. As we got closer to the actual opening of the campaign, definitely they started flooding the space with everything from accusing Ukrainians of war crimes, genocide, to painting the picture that Ukraine was building up for an offensive in the Donbass. And then they were playing iteratively with what was happening in the information environment, right? So the United States and other countries were arming Ukraine. Russians were saying, aha, see, once Ukrainians are armed with Western weapons, then they're going to try to do an offensive campaign. That's what's going on. You see, this is NATO's plan. And of course, we're arming Ukraine in response to the Russian buildup, and Russians were pointing back to it. And even in the last days, you actually saw that, for example, there were missteps even by Zelensky. Zelensky went to Munich, said something about how maybe Ukraine should consider restoring nuclear capability. And as soon as he said it, Shoigu, right off the bat, begins saying, aha, there's a nuclear threat from Ukraine as well, and Putin too. So they started playing. You could tell that they were adapting on the fly very quickly in the final days. Part of the big challenge with tracking also was that a lot of the information environment was really being cooked on social media and other places. So people were looking at traditional media sources, and I think they were missing months of a narrative being shaped on social media. They're trying to follow mainstream state-controlled Russian media, and they were looking in the wrong place. And they were trying, and Russians were trying to shape the environment, not just in Russia, but also in Ukraine, and also about Ukraine in Western social media.
I think that's a really important point about the long arc of Russian disinformation, because we tend to think of Russian propaganda, Russian misinformation solely in the context of the buildup to the war. But as you point out, and I think exactly correctly, this is a long game, and it's a game that the Kremlin has been playing for a long time. So this begs the question, where do we go from here? Where do you see the conflict evolving to? What should we watch for, both in terms of important developments and in terms of media coverage? What can we expect?
That's the million-dollar question, obviously. A lot has happened in the last week that I think many people didn't expect. For me, of course, it's the raft of Western sanctions. Decisions were made several days into this war that nobody could have pictured being made. I mean, these sanctions are colossal. They're going to be a catastrophe for the Russian economy. And in a couple of weeks, Russia's going to look like an oversized Iran. And that might be even an optimistic description of what's going to happen. So I won't go down the rabbit hole of waxing prophetic about what I think might be the future of the Russian state or the actual political regime, where I'm starting to, for the first time ever following it, have doubts about its prospects. I think this is actually the beginning of the end. But if we look to the conflict itself, I think this war is going to drag on for at least several more weeks. I think that we're going to see increasing use of traditional firepower by the Russian military. I think that it's going to be a very destructive conflict. I think that despite all the challenges the Russian military has had, they still have considerable superiority over the Ukrainian armed forces, and we're going to see some pretty vicious urban combat. The biggest thing to look for, what's going to happen on the fight potentially in or around Kyiv, the capital, and how that's going to play out. I think that this may, if they don't achieve any of the military objectives that they really want, because I don't really see how Russia gets the political objectives they were looking for at this point. If they don't get any of the military objectives, I think they're going to be forced to sign some sort of ceasefire, at least to hit the pause button on this war. I don't think they're well positioned to sustain a war on a scale with this amount of resistance for more than a couple of weeks. And a lot of the cracks in the sort of edifice of Russian military power really showing, in large part because, again, they didn't prepare. These people actually thought they were going to invade the largest country in Europe, and they were going to be very successful in a few days, and they didn't really put anything into it. In fact, this is nothing like what the Russian army typically organizes and how it trains to fight, to be perfectly honest. That's why a lot of experts looking at it are dumbfounded by what they're seeing. But more importantly, the public itself, the public's not prepared to support this war. So I think there's going to be huge issues in trying to sustain it. Beyond that, we'll see if there are cracks in the regime itself and what that future holds. I'll say on the information side, again, the war itself is a huge puzzle. Russia completely ceded the information environment to Ukraine. Ukraine's made great use of it. Only in recent days do you see the Russian military trying to actually release some videos from the war and increasingly suggesting that, they are actually fighting in the rest of Ukraine proper. But originally, when they started off, they were basically hiding the whole war. They were trying to declare it as a Donbass special operation. Any outlet that said this was a war was notified they can't call it that. They have to only call it a special operation. They've started shutting down what was left of semi-independent media like Echo Moskvy and Dozh. They're gone. So we're basically seeing this regime rapidly turn even more repressive than it was. And it's even hard to predict what Russia's going to look like next week based on what's happened this past week. So the only thing I'll say is about the war. Putin's clearly still committed to it. And he wants the Ukrainian capital taken. He thinks that that's the center of gravity. Ukrainians have done well fighting back, but people were overly euphoric in the first 4 days because they get a distorted picture in social media of what's happening in the battlefield, for one. And also, I don't think they appreciate that nobody seriously expected Russia to somehow conquer the largest country in Europe in 4 days. That's not what was ever in the cards. But folks immediately got, I think, too optimistic about the trajectory of the war as well. And it's my job as an analyst to always introduce some pessimism into the conversation and say, Ukraine military is doing well, and Ukrainian morale is good, and they're holding. But also, you need to be very cautious on how you're interpreting the likely trajectory of this war barely a couple of days in, because a lot of people only 4 or 5 days into the war were already looking at it one way versus another.
Finally, I wonder how your own thinking about Russia has changed as a result of the current war. You recently co-authored a piece in Foreign Affairs in which you argued that while Western leaders have long thought about Russia as a declining power, it's more correct to think about it as a persistent one, one that's capable of serving as a spoiler for Western and American interests over the long term. Is that still the case? Or has the current conflict fundamentally changed Russia's trajectory?
Well, it's always the case. That's the whole point of the argument that Russia's a persistent power. And if you follow Russia over any given period of time, you'll see Russian resurgence and stagnation in decline and then resurgence again. You know, Russia's only special power is, as a great power in international politics, the only thing to me that makes Russia distinct is its capacity to put itself back together after state collapse or some total debacle. And it's done this repeatedly. It has survived things a lot of other great powers haven't, simply because it glues itself back together. I call it like the T-1000 of great powers. It shatters and it can come back together. I think parts of the whole Russia field are shattered now, because what does Russia's future look like after this? Whatever you may have thought a month ago about the trajectory of Russia, you could have debated. Is it stagnant? Is it in decline? Is it going to hold like this? Is it steady state stagnation over 20, 30 years? All bets are off completely from now moving forward. Now, like, we don't know what's going to happen. Yes, Russia's going to, you know, enter a precipitous decline. Is this political system going to hold? Is this regime going to hold in Russia? What falls after that? And this war. This war is fundamentally Putin's war. It's not like the Russia-Georgia war. It's not like the other campaigns. This is really his project. And I don't think it's going to work out. I think this is a terrible miscalculation. And I was writing that, you know, in the run-up to this, that if he did this, it would be because of complete delusions about what Ukraine is, tremendous war optimism, which is a common cause of conflicts. And it would be a terrible miscalculation. And that's the way so far it's playing out. But these are seismic events. These are fundamentally seismic events that are taking place.
Michael, thanks so much for doing this. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, of course. Of course. And I hope that the rest of us in the field work through the tragedy of what it is, what's happening to Ukraine, but also Russia, because this is almost the destruction of two countries that I'm witnessing.
Thank you for tuning in to Disinformation Wars. To learn more about the American Foreign Policy Council and our work on public diplomacy, visit us online at www.afpc.org. And as always, we hope you'll join us again next time.